Hello, fellow Rebel Capitals. Hope you're well. I'm here with my good buddy, Brent Johnson, and we are going to talk about this bombshell report from the BIS talking about $100 trillion, the T dollars, worth of debt that is just hiding in the shadows. It's off balance sheet, and it's just rather staggering. I did a whiteboard video on it. Brent and I were just discussing that. But I think it requires this is such a big deal. I wanted to bring Brent on the channel today and really kind of do a deep dive for all of the viewers and listeners, because I think this is something that just has to be on people's radar. So Brent, let's go back a couple of days, and you said that, I thought you were the one that kind of initially read through this and tweeted it out, but you said someone sent you this. And then
I had been tagged on it. I knew it was there. And I hadn't read it yet, but I knew, because I go and I check for these things about every quarter or so.
Yeah.
So I knew that it existed, but I hadn't gotten to it yet. Somebody, and I had it in the back of my mind I needed to read it, and somebody tagged me in a tweet on it. And so then I knew it was kind of being discussed. And so then I read it that morning, and then I started, sending out some tweets and highlighting some graphs. And I had responded to last week, a couple of weeks ago, there was a podcast with Lacey Hunt and Hugh Hendry. Yep. And they didn't specifically talk about this issue, but it touched upon it, right? And there was a response to that podcast on Twitter from someone who said, "I don't know why people worry about this euro dollar market. It's not as big as people think, and it's no big deal." and the thing is the disappointing thing is that, this is a smart guy who said this, right? Not just a smart guy, but somebody who a lot of experience, has his own firm. This is a recognized expert, and he's just wrong. Do you know what I mean? I don't think he's purposely being wrong, but it just shows you that even people who have been in this job forever and have been very successful in it, there's a big part of the market that they just don't fully understand.
It's a massive blind spot.
Right. And the problem, in his defense, there is not a lot of information about this market. And this is what Jeff Snyder, myself, a handful of other people have been trying to explain for 5 years now. Jeff's been doing it forever. I've been doing it for 4 or 5 years. There's a handful of other people that talk about the euro dollar market. But those of us who have tried to dig into it and really understand it, we might understand it better than others who don't know anything about it, but even we're not experts because there's limited knowledge, right? And so the disappointing part is when people say, because there's no hard data on it, it doesn't exist. And our point, or at least my point, I don't want to speak for anybody else. My point is that just because the hard data doesn't exist doesn't mean that the danger isn't there. And so then when you get these reports like this that come out from the Bank of International Settlements, so it's like, listen, if they can't get the information, I can't. Right. They have more access to it than I do. And so when they come out and they say, listen, this is a concern, and they put these numbers up there, these numbers are probably as big as they are. They're probably small. It's probably bigger than that. It's probably much bigger than that, because I was trying to read it quickly before I jumped on here to find somewhere in there. They say something to the effect of, we gained this data by doing surveys and talking to. But nobody's required to give them all this information, right? This is just what they could come up with.
Yeah.
And then they even said in there, they're one of my favorite parts. I'm just going to quote it because I don't want to read it wrong. Before I forget, I'm just going to read this. This is near the end. And it's talking about the policy challenges that monetary authorities will run into as a result of this. It says, it's not even clear how many analysts are aware of the existence of these large off-balance sheet obligations. This makes it difficult to anticipate the scale and geography of dollar rollover needs. And again, if analysts whose job it is to cover banks and financial institutions and the global monetary system don't even know that this exists, what chance does the layperson have who doesn't even know, financial lingo and stuff? The reality is the financial lay people who have tried to dig into this and figure this out probably have a better handle on it than the experts.
Yeah. But the key here, I think the key advantage that we have, Brent, just is that we know what we don't know.
Yeah.
And so many of the quote unquote experts out there that are running billions and billions and billions of dollars just see the dollar universe as though it exists within the United States. And therefore they make decisions based on that premise, which we know is completely false. But let's, for those of the viewers who didn't actually see this report, let's go over to it really quick.
Okay.
And I just want to, I just want to get some of your insights here. So where I started reading it is right here. And I saw this based on the charts that you tweeted. Yep. It's so that the title here is, or at least of this section, dollar debt in FX swaps and forwards, huge, missing, and growing.
Right.
That's what I said on my whiteboard video, is that doesn't exactly install confidence in the global monetary system, does it?
Right. Yep. Yeah.
And they go on to say how just non-banks, they're looking at $25 trillion up from $17 in 2016. Non-US banks, upwards of $35 trillion. And they point out that much of this is very short term, meaning that it matures within the next year. And I know some of the pushback I got, let's go down to these charts that reflect this, Brent. Some of the pushback I got on my video is, well, what's the big deal? You know, they've rolled this debt over several times in the past. So why is this time any different? And I'm like, well, you must have missed that part in my whiteboard video where I discussed the fact that over the last, 9 months, year, whatever, the Fed has been raising rates. And at a historic level, or it is at a historic rate, and therefore, you know, what they could have rolled over last year at, let's say, 3%, now they're going to have to roll over at, let's just say, 7% or 8%, because although the Fed is enacting monetary policy for the United States, that does impact dollar lending
throughout
the entire globe. So getting over to these charts here, on the far left, we see the total amount, and this is an estimation by the BIS, that's this yellow line. So that would include these derivatives, the FX swaps, FX forwards, and currency swaps outstanding. Brent, do you understand these derivatives enough to know why the FX forwards and currency swaps, or maybe more specifically the FX forwards, are something that the BIS is considering debt, like dollar denominated debt or any currency debt?
Well, I think we should be clear here, and everybody will interpret this stuff a little bit differently. And the reason that it isn't on balance sheets and it's off balance sheet is it's not technically debt, but it's kind of like saying, you know, if I have $1 million mortgage that's on the books, and if you run my credit report, it's on there. But I also own Mr. Loan Shark down the street, $50,000. That doesn't show up on my credit report, but it doesn't mean that I don't owe that $50,000, right?
Exactly. Doesn't mean that it doesn't have to be paid back the real money.
And I'm not familiar with all the accounting practices and the regulations and the rules that went into why some things are on balance sheet and some things are not considered on balance sheet. But the fact these, for whatever reason, are not considered on balance sheet. And one of the main reasons is they, as you very well explain in your video, and before we go any further in it, let me just say, if you're not familiar with this stuff, go watch George's. He's got an 18-minute video that explains this report better, or at least as good as I can't really improve upon what George did. And then Alf Picatello, if you go to the Macro Compass website, he did a very good summary of this as well, which will explain all this in more detail.
And his handle is Macro Alf, just for those.
Macro people. Alf, yeah. So those are two good resources to kind of get up to speed on this. And so in defense of the people that do this analysis, and it isn't on balance sheet, but you know what I think the BIS is saying here, even though it's not on balance sheet, it's not like this money isn't owed and these aren't out there, right?
Yeah. And it's not like, but I think maybe even a better way to say that is, even if it's off balance sheet, it doesn't mean that it is off profit and loss, off P&L.
Right.
You still have to have the P part of it coming in, even if it's off balance sheet.
Well, and then I think, again, this is speculation on my part, but I think the reason that it's not included on balance sheet is because these are offsetting transactions. You know, euros are going this way and the equivalent amount of dollars is going that way. And at the end of the year, they have to swap them back. And so the idea is that these offset each other. So the risk isn't really 80 trillion or whatever the number is, because, you know, it's all going to get reversed at the end of the year anyway.
See, I don't get that. I don't understand how that's an offsetting transaction. Because both entities in the equation, let's just say it's a European entity and a US entity, and the US, I'm looking at the FX swaps now, and the US entity needs euros. So the European entity will borrow the euros. They've still got that debt. They borrow it directly from a bank in Europe at a lower rate, and then they give the euros to the US firm, which now has them on their balance sheet. And the US firm does the same thing for the European firm that may have an operation in the United States. But it's still a loan that those two entities have to pay back. And I don't know. And it's not just a $10 million. You got $20 million worth of debt, for heaven's sakes.
Listen, I'm on your side, George. I'm speculating as to why this stuff is off balance sheet. But this is the reason that people will say it's not as big a deal, is because these happen all the time. They go back and forth. Yeah, one side is owed, but the other side owes as well. And at the end, you just have to settle up and you pay the currency the interest rate differential, the currency difference. And the thing is with currencies, and this kind of goes back to the heart again to what I've tried to, you know, enlighten people on, and Jeff's done a fantastic job of enlightening people on this. Currencies typically don't move that much. Typically a big currency fluctuation is 4 or 5%, in which case, there is some, you know, risk in these. You know, at the end of the year, maybe the euro costs a little more, maybe the yen costs a little less. And so maybe there's a little bit of, you know, principal risk or you know, in these transactions, but it's typically not 20 or 30%. But because of where we're at in the cycle, we've got this debt super cycle, we've got the potential for a sovereign sovereign credit crisis, you got a potential for defaults, and currencies start moving 10, 20, 30%. That's when at the end of the year, or when interest rates go from 1% to 5%, right?
Right.
That's when for the last several years, maybe 10 years, you could say this hasn't been a risk because interest rates have been at zero and currencies have been stable, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And because, so the problem comes is when it's time to roll these over, and then one currency has moved dramatically against the other, interest rates are dramatically higher, or where it really, really, really becomes a huge problem is when one of the entities goes out of business. And so even though it was notionally flat to begin with, now your counterparty's out of business. You may have been completely correct in your goal or your idea, but if your counterparty can't pay you, now you've got the hole. And now if you've got the hole, your counterparty on another trade has a hole. And it becomes this daisy chain of defaults, right? And so that is the issue. And so you know, the very smart people have responded to these posts and said, everybody relax. These are just notional numbers. They've been around forever. It's not a big deal. And it's on a normal, regular, everyday basis. It's not a big deal until it is. And then it becomes the biggest deal in history.
That's a great point, Brent. Let me play devil's advocate. Cause it just dawned on me why someone would say these are offsetting. I think I get it now. So to be fair here, guys, I think, what they're saying is entity A in the United States needs euros. So they're going to borrow dollars to give to the European corporation, but then, so that's going to be on their balance, or should be on their balance sheet. But then the European corporation is going to give them $10 million worth of euros. So I think that when they're saying it's offsetting, they're meaning because the US entity is taking on 10 million in debt, but they're receiving 10 million from the on their balance sheet, if it was on the balance sheet, those two transactions would offset each other. But you point out, I think brilliantly, that they might offset, but if one of those entities in the daisy chains goes bust, then since this whole euro dollar global monetary system is so incestuous and there's so much counterparty risk layered on counterparty risk on counterparty risk, you don't have to have that many defaults in order for the whole thing to to collapse in on
that's
itself.
Right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that this is why, this is fundamentally why when Lehman Brothers went bankrupt, it was such a big deal. Because Lehman Brothers was a huge counterparty in the derivatives market. Right. And so even though the trades offset, when one of these goes bankrupt and then there's a hole, and then all of a sudden, all the trades that Goldman Sachs had with Lehman Brothers, there's now Goldman Sachs has the hole, right? And so now anybody that had a derivative swap with Goldman Sachs, now they have a potential problem because Goldman has a problem. And it just, it's so incestuous and it's so big that that's, and then it leads to uncertainty, right? And in uncertain, what do you do in uncertainty? You stop lending. You hold on to those, going back to my musical chairs example, you grab onto a chair as quickly as you can because you know it's only a matter of time before everybody wants a chair.
Yeah.
And you don't get up and start dancing again very quickly. You're very cautious of when you get up and start dancing and let go of that chair. And in a system that's designed in a way that you need currency and funding to circulate, grabbing onto the chairs and holding on for dear life and not letting go is the death of that's how a system fails. That's how this type of a system fails.
Yeah.
And so the idea that these notional derivative balances are nothing to be worried about. It's not nothing to be worried about. Now, perhaps we don't need to have a complete meltdown over it, and be all up in arms. But to say that it's not a risk is just fundamentally incorrect in my
opinion. Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macro economics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out of control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. I'm just trying to think through what type of debt is not offsetting, because if assuming that I'm getting their definition correct, and maybe I'm not. But if I take out a mortgage, I assume that debt on my balance sheet is a liability, but I assume the dollars or the house is an asset. So it isn't all debt.
Yeah. I mean, sort of. It's a little different between you're just swapping currencies, right? So I'm giving you 10 Snickers bars and you're giving me 10 Reese's peanut butter cups.
But I had to borrow those Reese's peanut butter cups.
Well, my point is it's a swap. It's not an outright loan. Now I know in a loan you're getting some kind of collateral, but it's not exactly the same thing. But again, if currencies are stable, if interest rates are stable, if politics is stable, if there's no global military conflict going on, and if currencies aren't moving 20 or 30%, theoretically, from a currency swap standpoint, it's not that risky of a deal. The problem again comes when you get these huge moves. I mean, the moves that we have seen in the last 12 months from a interest rate perspective and a currency perspective, or I don't know what the standard deviation, move it is, but it's a huge standard deviation move. I would argue one of the few things that has offset that with the volatility that should be associated with that is the fact that volatility has just stayed very low for whatever reason. But if you started to get high volatility and even just one or two defaults start in an environment where interest rates are now five times as high as they were a year ago, and where currencies have moved 5, 10, 15, 25%, this could get out of control very quickly. Again, it's not out of control right now, but that's not to say that it's a little bit like saying, let's say
it's
you
like
have
FTX. It's like FTX, yeah. Brent.
No, exactly right. Or who's the best? Who's the best F1 driver? Is it Hamilton?
No, it's the Danish kid.
Okay, whoever it is. If he is driving at 200 miles an hour on around a track, and he's done, I don't know, 50 laps, and he hasn't wrecked yet, it doesn't mean that the 51st lap isn't risky, right? Mm. It's still risky, but you know, I mean, sure, maybe he's the greatest race car driver in the world, and as a result, there's less risk with him driving than if I was driving. But it's not. But just because risk hasn't, just because an accident hasn't happened, doesn't mean it wasn't risky. Mm, or right. take the other one. Let's use Evel Knievel as an example.
Yeah.
Let's say Evel Knievel is going to jump over the fountains at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. And he gets back on his motorcycle and revs it up and he hits that ramp and he jumps the fountain and he lands and he lands it. And everybody cheers and he goes home and goes out and celebrates that night. It doesn't mean that the jump wasn't risky. Just because you succeed in something doesn't mean that it wasn't risky. And that's what I would say. That's how I would characterize these notional currency derivatives and these currency swaps. They have been successful, but it doesn't mean there was no risk. But all it takes is a few crashes, and then the whole system is in trouble.
Yeah, and let me just add a little more context here, because I think just for the audience to be clear, we could be talking about two separate things from the standpoint of how many transactions are involved. So I think if I'm understanding you right, there can be an FX swap where entity A just happens to have $10 million on their balance sheet already, and entity B happens to have $10 million worth of euros on their balance sheet already, just in retained earnings, let's say. And they go ahead and swap those. You know, the one entity gives the euros, the other entity gives the dollars, and then they're good to go. What I am talking about, and maybe I'm wrong, is a transaction where those $10 million don't already exist on the balance sheets of the two entities, and they have to borrow those from a local bank where they are domiciled in order to give the currency, or, you know, in the form of a debt or this derivative transaction, to the other counterparty. So I don't know if both those things would.
I think they both. I'm sure they both exist in some form somewhere.
Okay.
But again, if you just think about the size of it, we're talking about 80 trillion.
Yeah. So Brent,
people forget how big these numbers are. We've started saying trillion so easily that people just forget how astronomically ridiculous these numbers are. Just for some context. For anybody's listening, if you live to be a trillion seconds years old, you would be 32,000 years old. Mm. That's the context for trillions, right? I mean, it's so big that your mind just rejects the idea.
Yeah. I gave a presentation today for the virtual money show. And one of the charts I used to describe exactly what you're saying, Brent, and this BIS report is right here. I'll show it to you. It's this is the default rate for mortgages going back to the GFC, because everyone thinks that all these strippers took on 55 mortgages. You know, we all saw it in the Big Short, and that, you know, 50% of these mortgages that were taken out were defaulted on, and this, you know, had this meltdown effect with the mortgage-backed securities, which completely imploded the entire global economy. But what most people don't realize is that's not really true. The default rate that caused basically the GFC went up by 4%. It went from 1.5 to 5.5. That's it.
Yeah.
Just a 4% move in the default rate caused the GFC. And now granted it was already, on thin ice due to the euro dollar system and whatnot. But that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back.